Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church podcast. This week, Pastor Trey Kelly leads us in the series, Security.
I know that some of you have kids, and so you can relate to this. And if you don't have kids, then this is a good reason to have kids, because it's really cool. A new phenomenon has developed at my house. It hasn't been this way all the time. And before I even tell you what the phenomenon is, I need you to hear me clearly. I'm not bragging, because this is totally undeserved, okay? It's undeserved. But a new phenomenon has developed in my house, and it's what I call the rock star greeting. My children have three boys, 6, 4, and 16 months. David's the oldest, Jonathan's the middle, Jacob is the youngest. And, they have started meeting me when I get home from work like I'm Barney. I mean, like I'm a Power Ranger, like I'm a freaking rock star. Like, you walk in the door, I mean, and you think I'm handing out chocolate or something. They will come tearing through the house. You know, the two oldest come running. They grab me. They try to tackle me. They go, Daddy, Daddy. And then Jacob, that's my littlest. He's like 16 months old. He's going, Dada, Dada, Dada. I mean, they go crazy when I walk in the house. And it's awesome. I'm not going to lie. It rocks. Now, the other thing, because I'm impressed with my children, I'm kind of competitive, is I think they are maybe the best at this ever. Because they will sometimes greet me outside. Like, they see me pull up the driveway. They hear it somehow. Their supersonic ears figured out. They come tearing down the stairs. They greet me in the driveway. And if they miss me somehow, like, I take one step in the door, and their little ears just, I guess the radar goes off. They come tearing down the stair. I mean, they can get down those stairs in like 2 seconds. I could be in any part of the house. They could be in any part of the house. They could be engrossed in anything. They can have their headphones on. When Daddy walks in the door, they drop everything and they come running. And as I said, I deserve none of that, but it's still awesome. Now, many of you are parents. You've experienced that. But here's what they don't know. This new phenomenon is actually going to work against them, because they're proving that they really can hear me when I say, stop that. When I say, John, come here. Come here. Here, not there, here. It proves that they can hear me when they're upstairs wrestling and I say, boys, stop. Because these children that can break the sound barrier getting downstairs to greet me when I get home, when they in trouble, wow. Actually, it happened. This isn't a preacher story. This is true. It happened last night. We heard John. He was awake. I said, John, nothing. Silence. John, come here. This is what he does. So he's technically not disobeying because he's moving, but he's moving ever so slowly. He actually had his little blanket and he held it in front of his face, just moving towards me. It's amazing to me that these children who have this love for me and apparently think they must think I like them a good deal, because they'll come rushing towards me in certain instances. But the second they think they're in trouble, the second they think something's wrong, the second they think that they might get punished or they might have some discipline in some way, the switch is turned off. And for good or bad, they're scared of me. They're afraid. And if you're a parent in the room, you experienced this. Nobody wants their kids to be afraid of them a lot. There are times where fear works quite well, right? But no, we want our kids, at the end of the day, we want them to understand, look, you're a kid. My job is to teach you. My job is to train you. Yes, you are going to make mistakes. You're going to get caught. You're going to get busted. Our hope is that, and I'm going to have to punish you sometimes. You're going to have consequences. It doesn't mean I don't love you. It means I love you, which I didn't understand until I had kids, but it does. It really does. But what we want our kids to do, right? We want them to eventually figure that out and learn to trust us. and learn to trust, even if I'm going to get a spanking, even if I'm going to get the iPad taken away. That's what we do to our kids. We take away their iPad. My iPad, well, come on, it's their iPad. I just get to borrow it on Sundays. You know, we take that away. But any of those things, we're like, just trust us, man. Just trust us. And as parents, we get this. This is something that we experience. But when it comes to us, when it comes to us as adults or as teenagers and how we relate to God, I think most of us fall right back into the same pattern my children do. When things are great, when things are good, when we've done something good, we can't wait to run to God to show off and brag and say, look what I did for you, Daddy. But the second we mess up, the second we blow it, and don't act like you don't, because you do, and I do too, every single day. The second we do that, we get scared. We get scared of God. We get scared of what he's going to do. We get scared of what's going to happen. And many of us end up hiding, running the other way, or just avoiding God completely. So what I want to do today is I want to talk about that. Because if we want to experience security in our lives, which is what the whole series has been about, then we got to figure this piece out as well. See, for the last 2 weeks, we've looked at this guy named David. He was a king. He was awesome, and he led armies. He conquered giants. And see, it's been pretty easy for us, if you've been here the last 2 weeks, to kind of excuse away some of David's security, some of his relationship with God, because we say, well, of course David had a great relationship with God. David never made a mistake. I mean, this is a guy, the stories I've shared has been about him trusting God completely, about him obeying even in the little things. Last week we saw David, he was about to get murdered by a dude, and he didn't kill him because he was God's chosen king. Because Saul had been anointed and appointed to lead the nation of Israel, and David said, who am I to go against God? And you read that and you want to say, what? And we can get discouraged because we say, I could never live up to that guy. So the security he experiences, I could never have. But see, there's a third aspect, because it's a 3-week series, there's a third aspect I want us to see today about David's life, because my boy David did mess up. And I'm going to go ahead and say he messed up worse than anybody in this room's ever messed up. And we're going to see how he reacts to that. But before we do, I want to do a quick recap of what we've learned so far from the life of David. The main thing he's taught us, and the whole truth that this series has been built on, is this: that our ability to experience security in our lives is directly related to our willingness to trust God with our lives. That peace, that safety, that security we long for, that we take all these steps to find, we get security systems and we get locks on our doors and we get insurance policies and we have savings accounts and we put GPS trackers on our wife's car without her knowing so we can track her. We put our kids in certain schools. We don't let them hang out with certain people. We do everything we can to make sure it can be safe. And as I said, week one, guess what? There ain't no guarantee for safety. Because what we're doing is we're trying to take safety and make it our job. But what God wants us to do is he wants to say, hi, I'm God. Your security is my job. Let it go. Because I got your back. I love you. And so our ability to experience true peace, true security in our lives is directly related to our willingness to trust God with our lives. And through looking at the life of David, we've learned a couple of lessons. We've learned that David's past obedience, the obedience in the small things, the normal things, the everyday things, the things he didn't think mattered, the obedience while he was watching his daddy's sheep, that obedience prepared him to conquer a giant. We learned that David was a man who chose to obey God when it didn't make sense. Even though disclosing this piece of information might cause me to lose my job, might cause this deal not to close, it's okay, because we need to trust God, because that's God's job, not ours. Our job is to honor and obey God. And like I said, that's the good David. Today I want to talk about the bad, the David that if they made a movie about David, this would be what they made the movie about. If this happened today, this would be a front page story of the Sun News. If this happened today, all the Christmas parties, oh, they're probably called holiday parties, all the parties you've been attending, off in the corner with your little cocktail and your little whatever it is, and you're just kind of talking about such and such and such and such, this would be what you were discussing. It would have been on everybody's mind. In every Baptist church in Myrtle Beach, it would have been a prayer request. Dear Lord, we got to pray for Brother David. See, our boy David has become king now. And he's a good king. He's a successful king. He's conquered nations. He's got him a nice palace. And he's kind of chilling out. And so the Bible literally says, when the time came when kings go to war, which I think is hilarious that they had like a war season, but they did. And so it was time to go to war. I guess that was, they didn't have soccer, so they went to war. And so he sends the people out to war, but the Bible tells us that David, the king's supposed to go with him, but David didn't go. David didn't go to war this time. He told them, you guys got it. I'm going to chill out. And so one afternoon, we find David. He just decides to take a little stroll on his roof. It's a nice day. Let's hang out. He goes up there, takes a stroll on his roof. Now remember, all the men in the land are gone. They're all fighting war, so the women think they're all alone. And so there's this chick, this lady, this gal who's up on her roof taking a bath. That means she's naked, by the way. She's done nothing wrong. She didn't know anybody was home. She thought she was fine. Well, David spots her. And David watches her take her bath. He enjoys it. He actually calls somebody up and he says, hey, who's that? And I imagine the servant was like, okay, how do I say this to him without making him mad? But he really needs to know who that is. And so the servant goes, King, your majesty, your highness, her name's Bathsheba. And David's like, oh, Bathsheba. All right. And the servant goes, sir, yeah, she's married to Uriah. You know, Uriah the Hittite. You know, your really good friend. You know, the guy who's been by your side for a long time. You know, one of your mighty men, one of the dude who's had your back and protected you. Yeah, that's who that is. I'm gonna go now. And so David doesn't care. And I guess he goes and gets another servant, and he sends for Bathsheba. And for good or bad, when the king calls, you go. And David spends the evening with Bathsheba. Just like that. You're like, what are you doing? Really? But he does. Just commits adultery, just like that. Sends her on her way because he's done with her now. A few weeks go by, and Bathsheba sends word through some messenger. I don't know. They didn't have Facebook back then. But if so, she would have Facebooked him and said, call me now. She was pregnant. Well, see, now David was caught. But David has this idea. He's like, oh, I'll call my good buddy Uriah the Hittite because he's my friend and I love him. And I'm going to invite him to come home. Home from the war, give him a week off, let him rest. So he brings Uriah home and sends Uriah on his way. And he actually gets word from one of his servants the next day. My bet is it was the same servant because the servant's like, dude, you messed up and I knew you would. And I'm going to get you back now. And the servant goes to David. David says, did Uriah go home and enjoy time with his wife? And the servant says, no, sir. Actually, he slept at the door to the palace. And David's like, why on earth would he do that? And he said, well, Uriah said that since his brothers were all fighting, how dare he go spend time with his wife when they couldn't? David was like, man, that guy's a jerk. And so the next night, David brings Uriah into a party, gets Uriah drunk. Because, you know, alcohol makes everything easier. And so He gets Uriah drunk, sends Uriah home, says, go home. That's an order. He doesn't. Spends the night by the gate once again. And so David, because he's just trying to get out of this, writes a letter to the general over the army. His name's Joab. And he says, I want you to place Uriah on the front lines of the next battle. And I want you to tell everybody else that on your command they're to withdraw, except Uriah, because I want him dead. And so David, this man after God's own heart, this guy you've been thinking is perfect for 2 weeks, writes a death sentence in a letter, hands it to Uriah, and says, give this to Joab when you get back. And this isn't a happy ending. That's exactly what happens. And when Joab actually delivers word to David, he sends a messenger and he says, tell David that this happened and we were defeated here. And when the king questions, say, but Uriah the Hittite also fell. The guy gets back. David gets mad. What is Joab thinking? What's going on? And he says, oh, well, he also wanted me to tell you that Uriah the Hittite fell. And David goes, oh, well, win some, lose some. Tell Joab he'll get them next time. David waits the appropriate amount of time for Bathsheba to mourn. And he brings her into his house to be his wife. How you feeling about David now? I mean, the guy, first he commits adultery. And I don't mean lusting in your heart adultery. I mean real adultery. Then he lies about it, and then he commits murder. And I don't want you to think that there was any point in time where David's conscience got the better of him. It never happened. He moves on with his life. Okay? Moves on. Fast forward a few months. This guy named Nathan, a prophet of God, comes to visit David. David has no idea that God's about to use Nathan to bust him. Nathan walks in and says, hey, David, how you doing, man? David says, well, I'm very good. How are you? Nathan says, good. Hey, I got a story to tell you. All right. And Nathan begins to tell David the story where he says, I want to tell you the story about there was a rich man and there was a poor man. And this rich man, he had tons of sheep. He had tons of land. He had tons of cattle. He had everything he could ever want. And this poor man had but one sheep that he had raised from birth. He had nurtured. Actually, the sheep, they found her wandering. She didn't even know where her parents were. He had nursed her from birth. He had taken care of her. He had cherished her. And this rich man had some friends coming over, and he was going to have a party. And the rich man, rather than go into his own stock, go into his own sheep, he went and stole the sheep from the poor man, slaughtered it, and served it to his guests. And David got furious. Not at Nathan, because David had no idea he was busted. David just got mad. David was kind of dumb. He missed this. I want you to see what he says. 2 Samuel 12, verse 5 says this. Says, David was furious. As surely as the Lord lives, he vowed, any man who would do such a thing deserves to die. Now, we are judgmental when it ain't us. He must repay 4 lambs to the poor man for the one he stole, and for having no pity. David's missed it. And so Nathan, because he speaks for God and he don't really care, helps him out. Verse 7. Then Nathan said to David, you are that man. Freeze. This is the moment that I want to talk about today. This is the moment that whether you believe in God or not, you've all experienced at some point in your life. Stone cold busted. You know you have. You got caught. You got caught in something, and there's no way out. There ain't a lie you can tell big enough to get out of that one. How did it feel when you were in that place? What did you think? Did you want to run? Did you want to hide? Did you want to avoid that person? If you are a Christ follower or have any kind of relationship with God, how'd you feel about God in those moments? Was your first instinct to run to God and to want to talk to him and to want to deal with him and say, "Yo, God, what's up? Yeah, I just got caught, dude. This is awesome." No. See, the question for us today, and the question we've got to answer if we want to live a life of security, if we want to live a life with a relationship with God, here's the deal. The question isn't whether or not we can live a life of perfect obedience, because newsflash, you can't. Okay? It will not happen. It's impossible. Does it mean we should stop trying? Absolutely not. But we will mess up, sometimes in big, gigantic, huge ways. So the question isn't, will we mess up? The question is, what should we do when we mess up? Because whether you know it or not, your reaction to messing up, your reaction to your mistakes speaks volumes about your relationship with God and what you think of him. It speaks volumes. And I want you to see what David did. My boy David, big screw up, colossal, probably bigger than anybody in this room. I'm going to go for it and say that. Busted. I want you to see what he does in verse 13. Then David confessed to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." See, he owned up to it immediately. He didn't delay. He didn't slow down. He didn't hide. And in fact, we have a psalm. The middle of the Bible has a bunch of poems in it, and they're called psalms. And David wrote a great many of them. And Psalm 51 is actually one he wrote when this happened. This is what David was thinking. This was David's prayer to God when this happened. And I want to share it with you because to me, it blows me away and it teaches me a ton about how to live my life in relationship with God and how to truly feel security in my relationship with him going forward. Here's what it says. Psalm 51 starts in verse 1. "Have mercy on me, O God, because of your unfailing love, because of your great compassion, blot out the stain of my sins." He owns it all. He says, "Wash me clean from my guilt, purify me from my sin. For I recognize my rebellion. It haunts me day and night. Against you and you alone have I sinned. I have done what is evil in your sight." Now, how can David do that? How can David, who just got busted, and not a little busted, not a "you stole some cookies" busted, but a "you committed adultery and murder" kind of busted, how can David then just turn and go straight to God? We see that and we're like, "Dude, whoa, 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 you need a cool off period. God literally might he might smite you at that moment. You got to chill out." See, the second line of this passage tells us is something that David got that we don't. The second line, he says, "Have mercy on me, O God, because of your unfailing love." See, David knew, no matter what I do, God's got my back. God loves me no matter what. David knew, I have made big, colossal mistakes, and I'm going to suffer consequences for those mistakes. I'm going to pay for them. I can either go through that alone, or I can go through that with the God of the universe who adores me. And so David chose God. David chose to run back into the arms of the God who loved him completely and totally. That's not what we do. It's not what I do anyway. That's not how we do it, because at the core, the reason we don't do that, the reason we don't run to God, and it pains me to say it because I'm a pastor and I get paid to do this, but the reason we don't run to God that way is because we don't trust Him. We don't really believe He loves us because we think He loves like we do, with conditions. And the reason we think that is because there's this other force, there's this other entity. I don't like to talk about him a whole lot. I don't like to give him too much credit, but you got to today. There's this other dude. His name's Satan. People call him the enemy. People call him the devil. And see, this guy hates your guts. And I hate the dude for a ton of reasons. But the real reason we're talking about today is because he talks out of both sides of his mouth. He takes both sides of an issue. In fact, Satan, in many ways, is a lot like a politician. Yeah, I said it. He's a lot like a politician. Satan will say whatever it takes to get the upper hand, to get the advantage, and to get power. It don't matter what's right or wrong. He's going to say whatever it takes to get you to like him and get you to listen to him. Here's what I mean about this sin thing. If you've been following God, even if you haven't been following God, Satan is still speaking in your life and still trying to distract you. What Satan does, he tries to convince you that God's way is stupid, that his rules are wrong, his rules are bad, they're silly, they're outdated, that was another time, another place, that doesn't really count for me now, I can go my own way. Satan tries to make it look so enticing. Satan was on that roof with David saying, look at Bathsheba, dude, she is hot. Nobody will know. Dude, you're the king, man. It's good to be the king. Nobody will ever, ever, ever know what you did. See, that's what Satan does. He makes sin look enticing. He lures you in. The Bible actually calls it, he ensnares you. It's a trap. He draws you in. He is just talking up sin. It's the greatest thing since a bailout. And then the second you do it, the second you give in to that temptation, Satan turns on a dime. It's re-election season, so I got to change my vote. And so what he starts saying now is Satan becomes the most religious person you've ever met in your entire life. And the same guy that was telling you how enticing this would be and how awesome it would be and how you should do it now is judging you for the very thing he talked you into doing. And he's whispering in your ear, you know a good person wouldn't have done that. I can't believe you did that. Well, you know you can't ever tell anybody you did that. They would all judge you. I mean, look at your job. Look what you do. You can never tell anybody this. And don't you dare think about going back to God. Are you kidding me? God? Dude, God's done with you. You blew it. You blew it right there. That mistake, that has cost you your chance with God forever. See, that's what Satan starts whispering in your ear. And you know why? Newsflash. Because he hates your stinking guts. Because Jesus, when he was on earth, he told us this about Satan. Satan wants to kill, steal, and destroy your life. But we do. We fall prey to it. We let him talk us into mistakes. And then we let him convince us that God's love is not big enough, strong enough, wide enough, and deep enough for us to ever go back. And it's a lie from the pit of hell. It's a lie David figured out. David knew what was really up. David knew that God loved him no matter what. Even after he committed adultery, even after he committed murder, even after he lied about it, even after he involved innocent people in his conspiracy, David still knew at his core, God loves me, and here's why. If you have taken no other note, I beg you to write this down, because you need to put this somewhere where you see what I'm about to say every single day, especially when you mess up. And if you're like me, that is every day. Because everything else we've talked about, if you can't get what I'm about to tell you, if you can't get this piece, none of it else matters. Because everything else is built on performance and built on us doing better and obeying all the time. But if you can't get what to do when you blow it, you'll never experience security in your life. Here's what David got. Here's what we got to get and we're done. Security is the knowledge that God knew every mistake we'd ever make, and he still chose to die for us. He knew every mistake you'd ever make. I don't mean every mistake you'd make until the point you found Jesus. I mean the mistakes you're going to make tomorrow. I mean the screw-ups you're going to have next year. The screw-ups you're going to have 10 years from now. When Jesus was on that cross, he thought of you. He thought of every single one of those things, and he said, I love them anyway. And I'm here now to pay the price for every one of those things so that there never comes a moment where they have to doubt that I love them, where they have to doubt that they can run to me and not away from me. Ever. They have to know that I'm in this for life. That's what David got. David knew that even though this was awful and he was going to pay consequences for it, he knew it didn't surprise God. And God was up there saying, hey man, your life is going to be in shambles and I want to help you put it back together. Run to me. Now, does this mean we should live life how we want? Does this mean we should take advantage of this and just go crazy? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But when we do mess up, we should run to our source of strength, not away from our source of strength. Because he loves you. He's forgiven you. You just need to forgive yourself. And I close the same way I opened. If you're a parent in this room, this isn't a difficult concept to understand. Do you love your children? Yes. Do they mess up? Lord, yes. Do we have to discipline them and teach them? Yes. But do you ever stop loving them? And now I want to ask you, just take a step back and admit for one moment that you're human, that you're imperfect. Okay? And just ask yourself, if I'm an imperfect human and I'm capable of that, what is God capable of? Because he's perfection. He's holy. He's perfect. He's outside of time. He knew everything I'd ever do wrong. He knew how I disappointed him. He knew how I would just do things in complete disregard for his word. And he still chose to die for me. That dude must love me a lot. See, some of you in the room today are Christ followers, and you just need to accept that you're forgiven. Others in the room today, this whole God thing's new for you, and you need to have a serious conversation. And you need to say, man, why am I not following this guy? What on earth am I doing? This isn't the God I've always been taught about. I thought God had a bunch of rules and stuff, and he's got one. He's God and you're not. You get that one? You get he sets the rules. You get that he says the way to get to him is through his son Jesus, and that's it. Just trust in Jesus and live for him. That's about it. And he'll transform your life. And you'll never experience the peace and security you were designed for without it. So my challenge to you as we close the series, give the job over to God. Stop thinking you can solve all your own problems. Stop thinking you can take enough steps. Stop it. Just rest for a minute. And hand it over to God. You'll never find security in God until you accept love from God. Never. It won't happen. But when you do, when we do begin to accept that love from him and we begin to feel it and to experience it, trusting him gets easier and easier and easier because God's love is never ending. And it's the key to feeling peace and security in your life. Heavenly Father, I pray right now that you speak to our hearts, that you help us trust you. It's like the man said in the New Testament. He said, I believe, help my unbelief. Father, I pray for those in the room right now who have been running, who they made a mistake, and this is the first time they've been back in church because they were afraid you were going to strike them dead. Father, fill them with your love and compassion. God, just help us to experience how high and how wide and how long and how deep your love really is. It's deep enough for every mistake I'll ever make. Teach us to rest in you and to experience the security you have for our lives. Teach us to run to you, not run from you. It's in your name.
Thanks again for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast. If you'd like to join us on a Sunday, we meet every week at Myrtle Beach Middle School. For more information, go to wellspringchurch.tv.